Welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's radio show, AC23. The mission of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge is to foster the creative capacity in the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, teaching, and training. Over the next 23 minutes, you'll hear from staff members, artists, and arts organizations throughout our region. If you'd like to hear this episode again, you can find it online at www.artsbr.org.
All right. I would like to welcome our AC23 listeners to another session. I'm Mike Essenault, Director of Arts and Education here at the Arts Council of the Greater Baton Rouge. And today I have a friend and amazing artist, visual artist, Mr. Mike Weary. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Absolutely. Mike and Mike.
Mike and Mike. Mike check.
So Mike Weary is our primary artist in residence here at the Arts Council, Greater Baton Rouge. He is artist liaison for the Arts Council. You're the curator for the arts, our art gallery.
Yes, yes.
That's a lot of hats. And then, of course, you're a very busy freelance visual artist.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I do a few things, yeah.
Well, so tell the listeners, like, what you're up to. All things Mike Weary.
Oh, man. All things Mike Weary. First and foremost, I always lead with just, I'm an artist, just purely. I wake up in the morning and I the first thing I'm thinking about is, all right, what am I creating today? Mm-hmm. And when I say creating, I mean, you know, specifically visual art, painting, drawing. Am I drawing something? And after I'm drawing it, what am I painting? Mm-hmm. I work with oil paints and I mix it with copper and iron, and that's kind of where my mind goes. And typically I dream a lot, and so waking up is usually the first thing I'm thinking about is painting, because I'm usually creating those things in my dreams. If I'm not creating, literally painting in my dreams, I'm dreaming something wild. So I'm like, all right, I gotta get that down. So that's kind of where I start my days. And then I get up early and I work through all of those emotions, all of those different things that are coming to me, and then about mid morning, I'm getting into the more service to the people more so, and that's kind of mm-hmm. where I am now. It's just creating, and then how can I help others to do the same.
So would you say, based on that, you do kind of your most creative time, would that be in the mornings?
Yeah, it's definitely in the mornings. I find a lot of visual artists, their most creative times are typically at night. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Mine has always been in the morning times.
Right.
I don't know if it's because I've had a lot of issues in the past with just like sleep and sleep deprivation, I guess, mm-hmm. insomnia, and longing to go to sleep, just laying there. So I never found myself creative. I found myself late at night just trying to go to sleep.
Right.
And so when I wake back up in the morning, it's just like so much of that is just weighing on me. And now it's like, I got to create it for some reason. So, yeah, the morning time for me is the most creative. I find it to be the quietest point in the day. You know, no one's really up. I mean, mm-hmm. I wake up typically around 5 in the morning and right. just kind of shimmy around town, shimmy around the studio. And it's very quiet. And that quiet helps me kind of sort through my thoughts and what I was just dreaming about, I guess. My son says his movies that he gets to watch all day.
Well, I know when I get here at the Arts Council, you've been going at it for a while.
Yeah.
That's pretty early in the morning.
Yeah, I've been doing daddy summer camp this summer, so I've been getting here a little bit later. So I've been getting here about 8 o'clock now, but ideally I like to get here closer to 5:30 or 6,
mm-hmm.
And usually before that, I'm usually up about 4:30, and I'm just, wow. I don't know, it's like my body tells me you need to get up,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I'm just, again, it's just, I don't know, there's something peaceful about the morning time.
Sure.
There's something peaceful about always watching the sunrise.
Mm.
I find that's something that most people miss. We always see the sunsets, you know, everybody's there for a sunset, but the sunrise, like, you got to actually be up for that. You know,
right?
Or you feel the sunrise, maybe, you know,
mm-hmm.
coming through your window, but no one's there sitting at the horizon waiting for it to kind of just come up. And right. I find something enjoyable about that.
Well, one of the things I've always found fascinating in getting to know you is, and I'm not a visual artist, so I don't know much at all about technique, but I do find it interesting that when you paint, it seems like the majority of the time, you do your paintings upside down.
Yeah. And that's
when you're creating.
Yeah. I turn them upside down. Now, as far as technique, it's a fairly common technique to do at some point during your process. And when I say common is if you go to art school, some teachers may tell you, hey, you know, if you're struggling with a piece, if you're not sure where you want to go with this piece, maybe turn it on its side, maybe turn it upside down, and you'll see something, you know, maybe that's glaring that you didn't see right side up. But I do that process from the start to the finish. And it's for me, number one, I think I am dyslexic. A lot of things kind of come in visually backwards, especially like listening. If someone tells me something, I have to kind of rearrange it most of the times to for it to make sense for me.
Right.
And also visually writing stuff. It's like writing has always been an issue with, like, I'm left-handed. So I don't know if that has something to do with it. I don't know, but it's the input for me is always skewed. And I didn't really know it was skewed until, like, you get into school and you're trying to learn things and you have to, like, learn and relearn.
Right.
And re-break things down. But in the visual arts of it all, as far as the technique, it does break down the images, I find, easier. Another technique that I would say is similar is if you're using reference or if you're looking out into nature and you're drawing a painting from nature, you know, you're taught sometimes to squint your eyes because we're creating from how light is hitting objects, right?
Right.
That's how you create, you know, the visual. And when you squint, it breaks down those what we call values to a more simpler version. So if I squint and I'm looking at your face right now, you know, the squinting breaks down the shinier part where the light from above is hitting your forehead to the darker part, as opposed to I can see every single nook and cranny when I'm looking at you with my eyes wide open.
You're making me very self-conscious right now, but okay, go ahead, keep going.
But yeah, so I can see all the wrinkles, man, all the wrinkles.
They're there.
I can see all of them. But when I squint, I don't see as many wrinkles, so it allows you to simplify the version. I think also turning it upside down kind of does the same thing, where it simplifies the imagery, and it also allows you to be in a state of feeling a little bit more authentically without having to do what I call like noodling, where you get to a point of just, oh, I'm trying to paint this eyeball, and you know, I'm so focused on, you know, the retina and the iris, and this has to be accurate, and this has to be this, and maybe not so much for an eyeball because it's circular, but when it's upside down, you're not looking at the image almost for what it is. You're just looking at the value, and you can have a little bit more of creative interpretation between those values, which lends, I feel, to a more interesting image. I think sometimes when people look at images and, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes what's considered a good visual image versus a bad visual image. Right. I always think that it's just hesitation. And that hesitation I find comes, for me at least, when I'm just trying to overthink what I'm painting or drawing.
Sure.
Because I'm trying to do all the details way too soon. And it's just, I don't know, our eyes are, as humans, are very sophisticated.
Right.
So you can tell, I don't know, I guess it's almost like when you're listening to someone sing almost, right? Like, or playing an instrument where you can almost tell the difference between someone, I don't know, maybe you can tell me better, but like someone who can play, let's say the piano, right? And they know how to play the piano. Jazz, right? Whereas like you know the basics of it so well to where you can kind of get a little freer.
Sure.
And it still sound well. As opposed to someone who doesn't have those mechanics so well down and try to be a little bit more loose and free, and it can kind of sound a little...
Yeah, the technique or the facilities.
Yeah, you can hear the technique, although they're kind of playing around. It's the same thing visually, where it's like, you can... The technique, if you're well in your season, the technique will still be there, you know, if you're still...
It's interesting, because I hadn't really thought about it until this conversation, but the idea of turning the painting upside down, there's a thing in music when I was studying composition,
where
you're taught, let's say you write a melody.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine that melody written on the page. So that melody has a shape to it, you know, low going high, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's a technique called inversion, where you take that melody and you turn it upside down.
Yeah.
This is all in an effort to, like, create new content, but it's organic because it's coming from the original idea.
Yes.
So you can turn it upside down and start sparking new ideas. You can also, there's a thing called retrograde inversion, where you have the idea upside down now, but you do it backwards.
Yeah.
But it's all, but the beauty of this is, and I'm kind of seeing how it might be related to visual art, it's all organic.
Yeah.
You're not creating anything new necessarily. You're just twisting it and morphing it into something else.
And yeah, it's the same thing, right? Because obviously there's composition in visual art also. And, you know, being able to compose your image is similar in that same thing, right? Where it's like when I'm looking at my values, I'm painting and I'm creating my values as I go. And so there are points in my composition that I know, okay, this is going to be a little bit higher and this is going to be a little bit more bassy, I guess, like in your darker tones. And you have to balance those in a way, or not balance them, but there is a method to that madness. It's not just throwing the paint on it. The composition does come into play there too. So there is a lot of similarities between, I mean, I listen to music a lot, and I can see colors when I hear like certain songs. Like I'll play certain playlists to evoke certain imagery and evoke certain colors and certain feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to just translate that a lot of times to just what I'm painting, you know, especially if, I mean, most of the time I know what I'm painting ahead of time, right? Like I know I'm about to paint a person, you know, holding a goat. Right. So if I know that ahead of time, I'm like, all right, let me play a little bit of, I don't know.
What music goes with that?
Okay, so for me, with music, I'm listening to a lot of this artist called St. John.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that because I'm in the mood of painting someone holding a goat and this song called Guyanese Mosh Pit.
Okay.
And it's like the image itself is a man holding a goat, but he's surrounded by like an endless crowd.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to create this chaos with this, you know, kind of solemn figure in the middle of it. And so, but that song has a lot of like, I mean, it's basically like punk rock almost.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of all over the place, but it's those tones that it starts with are very like, I guess low in register. Is that the best way? I don't know how to explain
sure.
the
yeah,
music.
Low pitches.
Mm-hmm. So those colors to me, and I think a lot of times that's where those rustier colors come from, that iron, that grayish, and the texture also of that is kind of like,
sure,
like really early on in the song. So that part is where I really start with like a lot of my textures, and I start there,
right?
And then pulling from that darkness more so, there's like little high points in the song, right, where he goes kind of high up because he sings, even though the beat on the song is very mosh pit rockish, he's like singing very softly across the song, and those little high points when he's singing kind of mirror some of the like glares of like I'm having like spotlights come in on the crowd in certain points, and that's kind of where I'm thinking those colors kind of come in there.
Interesting.
So like my mind's kind of just flowing around that a little bit.
Right. Now I'm curious, just we're talking about composition, visual art. I know for me as a musician and having written music for different things, if I'm writing for myself, it could take forever. One thing I've always enjoyed about writing for clients, whether it be a film or something, I might not say it during the process, but I really do like a deadline.
Yes.
Now, you know, when you're in the process and you have a deadline, it's ominous a lot of times, and it's an irritant. But knowing you have to have it done at a certain time, so how does that work with you? Do you feel the same way?
Even with my personal work, I've been trying to not so be so hard on myself with deadlines with my original work, but I do like to have a deadline overall, mainly for that hesitation factor. I feel like if I'm just sitting, I should say this. So with my process, I start a lot of that off with writing. So there is a part of that that I don't give myself a deadline with, right? Which is I'm writing about the concept. I'm composing the image itself. Like, where are the eyes going to be on this image? Where are the hands going to be situated?
You're writing words on a page?
Oh, yeah, I'm writing words on a page. Oh, okay. And those words, for instance, the one I'm talking about with the man with the goat, you know, the words across the canvas are, you know, at the mercy of the state. And this one in particular is about our environments and how we create poverty and how poverty creates criminality and how we create criminality and how we create, quote unquote, good thieves. It's around all of that, right?
Right.
So I start with the writing process of it. And then after the writing process, then I take those words and I place them, I literally write them on the canvas and kind of just give it like a spirit. I may write it sparingly. I might write it, you know, directly. But once I start writing it on the canvas, that's when I tell myself, all right, I need to complete this canvas by X date. Otherwise, I can sit with it for 2 years if I really wanted to, right? Like just like with any piece of art, like you can take it, break it down, redo it, take it, break it down, redo it, add to it. You can do that forever. But for me, and just the way my anxiety works, I know if I don't like just walk away from this image, I'm going to sit there with it for too long. And
oh, I see.
There's more, obviously it can grow, right? But I think I do love the time stamp of the image, right? Where it's just like I created this during this time period and then I walked away from it. So I would say for me personally, I do give myself deadlines. I've been trying to be a little bit more loose with the original work, but for clients, for sure. Yeah, I always give them deadlines. I do a lot of weddings. And with the weddings especially, we have our meetings prior to the wedding and I give them an expectation of, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen the day of.
Right.
And then post the wedding, I usually give them like 3 months. And with commissions, like someone that just wants me to create something original but for them, I do the same thing. I give them a deadline. But the funnier thing I do with those that I've had to kind of just embrace, that's just how I work. I'll do that same process that I do in my original work where I write and I sit with it. And I have a deadline now, right? Like I have a hard deadline. And a lot of times I wait until like literally like the last minute before I start actually drawing and painting. And I find my best work comes from that as opposed to what I used to do some years ago was I would, as soon as I get the, you know, the client and I give them like, you know, 6 months or however long it's going to take to create the painting, I just try to start immediately. Start. And then I'll do that process of like, well, now I'm kind of meandering with this work and I'm second guessing and I'm wanting to change this. And I find my work just wasn't as pure. So I was just relaxing more, thinking about it more, sleeping on it more, looking at just the blank canvas itself. And just imagining myself painting it, dreaming about painting it, so that when I actually paint it, I'm just doing it. And then now it those raw emotions and those raw strokes, I'm not noodling, I'm not painting over other strokes. I'm kind of just putting it where it needs to go.
Right.
And it kind of just happens. And then I just get it out with the studio.
Hmm. There's some, for me, right, like with writing music, there's a similarity in that I know it works better for me. And it's kind of the same thing. When I was younger, I would do the same thing, like jump right into it, whatever it was I was doing. As I've gotten older, at least have some sort of preconceived blueprint.
Yes.
But understanding that that blueprint can change, just having some sort of structure to work with really helps.
Yeah, I've been telling a lot of younger artists this too, like, because it is, you get these, especially as artists, right, creatives, you walk down the street and everything is inspiring or so much can be inspiring to you. You hear a song, you know, you talk to someone, you know, you smell, you eat something and you get inspired and the first thing you do is create. I've learned to just write those things down, take a beat even sometimes, think about it and then try to form, like you said, like a blueprint or compose it a little bit before I just jump into it. Because I would say there are times where that hits, right? Where it's like you're in the moment, you get inspired, you put something together, and it's like, oh, I can't believe I just did that out of the blue. But I would say 9 times out of 10, you look back at that a year later and you go, I was just kind of in the moment. I don't know what I was doing. Right. I probably should have did this. I probably should have changed that. Mm. And I found just even taking sometimes a week to just step back with my work sometimes and just think about what inspired me, write it down. If I keep coming back to it, especially, and adding more to a concept and adding more, and then after, like, you know, some of these paintings in there, I've been writing on it maybe for about a couple years. And then once I'm like, okay, this just has to be painted now, then I just go to paint it.
Right.
Because it's like, it's all fleshed out. It makes sense. I'm not going to say there's not a better way. Like you said, as I'm going along in the painting process, sometimes things do change, right? Like, oh, this background, I was going to do a sunrise. Well, now I want to do a storm now.
Right.
Because the way I was feeling originally was a little bit more positive in this part of the image, but maybe it's a little bit more tension as time went on, or as the painting process went on.
Right.
So I may change little things like that, or maybe even the level of detail, you know, that I may add. I may want to add a little more detail in this part of it just because of how I'm feeling now, or less, because, you know, I've grown to do that too, where I found that certain parts of the image, less definitely is more, because it brings focus to other parts.
Right.
And learning how to do that and it not take away from the image. Because it's easy to add less attention, quote unquote, or less detail to a certain part of an image to where it's glaring, where it's like, what is going on over here? And you're pulling focus away from where you want people to look, especially if it's somewhere to the edges of an image. Now, If their audience's eyes are going towards the edges too much, they're going to get disinterested sooner. So the more you can keep them, their eyes pulling back towards the center of an image, the more they stay and they look.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Even like this image here, like it's composed on this wall here to keep you where that orange, red, and yellow squares are.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in, and if you want to hear this episode again, you can find it on our website, artsbr.org, and click on AC23. We'll see you next time.